You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. And special greetings to Louise, my wife, because today is our wedding anniversary. So back long ago and far away, we got married and still are, and I'm very, very grateful for that. So happy anniversary, Louise. She just yelled happy anniversary. We were married, by the way, at today is the 11th day of the 11th month. And those of you who are students of World War I history will know that the armistice, Woodrow Wilson timed this. I don't know if he had the same astrologer Ronald Reagan had. Probably not. They were different generations. Maybe it was her grandmother. But Woodrow Wilson timed this so that he signed the armistice on 11-11 at 11-11 a.m. And so Louise and I got married on 11-11 at 11-11 a.m. And Kurt Stanley, Master Stanley, the Coptic minister who married us, and who I, after he died, I, for on and off for a year or two, I was the pastor of that church in Detroit. This was back in the 70s. He thought 11-11 at 11-11 a.m. was like one of the just high holy times of the year. So, but it's also Veterans Day. I mean, you know, it's Veterans Day in part because it used to be called Armistice Day. It used to be the day that the war to end all wars ended. And now it's the day that basically we give lip service to veterans. And I would like to suggest that we stop what has become a national tic, a national unconscious or involuntary spasm of saying thank you for your service. And I mean, we can continue to say that if you want, but I would like to add something to it, which is, I'm really sorry for what we've done to you. You know, on behalf of the United States, I'd like to apologize to our veterans. And the reason why is because we've had a series of wars, and these have been bipartisan. Vietnam was you know, Lyndon Johnson's war. We have had a series of wars since 1948 that really had nothing to do with the United States. They had no purpose. I think you can make a strong argument for Korea, and the strongest argument of that was Dwight Eisenhower campaigning in 1952 on ending that war, and then doing so by simply saying to the North Koreans, okay, we'll just draw a line and we'll just, you know, that's yours, this is ours, end of discussion. And then we had Vietnam. Well, then we had, you know, a number of small wars in the Central America, and then we had Vietnam, and then we were back to, you know, Ronnie Reagan having wars in Central America that were illegal and that we're still hearing the echoes of. You know, all these children coming in from El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras. And then on top of that, you know, Reagan had Grenada, and George Herbert Walker Bush had Kuwait. And, you know, everybody had to have a little war, right? George W. Bush was planning a war in Iraq back in 1999, 2 years before he was appointed president by the Supreme Court. Bill Clinton had his war in Bosnia. That one, I think you can make a stronger moral case for our involvement in that and the NATO coalition. But I realize it's still very contentious. But by and large, our veterans have been treated like crap. I mean, here's a news story from October of last year. The Republicans were going after the SNAP program, the food stamp program. About 900,000 veterans and 5,000 active duty troops face cuts in their food stamp benefits beginning Thursday as $5 billion is automatically trimmed from the SNAP program for low-income families. Republicans cutting food stamps for veterans. Here's another one. The House of Representatives on Thursday approved sweeping reforms to the nation's food stamp program that would cut some $40 billion in nutrition aid over 10 years and deny benefits to millions starting in 2014. That's this year. Many of those millions are veterans. February of this year, February 27th, Senate Republicans blocked Democrats from expanding a bill that would have expanded, from advancing a bill that would have expanded health care and education for veterans. Republicans blocked that. The Democrats called for a motion to waive the budget point. In other words, hey, let's get past this and go on with this. It got 56 votes in the Senate, all the Democrats and a couple of Republicans. But still, the Republicans, you know, Mitch McConnell insisted on filibustering. It took 60 votes and it never got them. On May 29th, 2014, Senate Republicans blocked $21 billion to build new VA clinics because they said it was too expensive. But they did want, this is $21 billion for veterans, they did want a $600 billion tax cut for big corporations, big multinational corporations. In June of this year, by the end of June, an estimated 285,000 veterans will be going without long-term unemployment benefits because Congress allowed the program to expire in December. We got over a quarter million veterans who have lost their long-term unemployment benefits. Why? It actually passed the Senate. You can't blame Mitch McConnell on this one. It went to the House where John Boehner said, you know, if I put this on the floor of the House, all the Democrats are going to vote in favor of extending unemployment benefits, and there's no shortage of Republicans who will. There's going to certainly enough Republicans that'll pass, and because that would be inconsistent with the caucus room conspiracy plan to destroy Obama and deny him any kind of legacy, because Obama might get some credit for a quarter million veterans having their long-term benefits, unemployment benefits extended. Screw the veterans. This is what John Boehner, in effect, said. Screw the veterans. Not to mention George W. Bush. You might want to pull up that Cindy Sheehan clip. Yeah. Well, here's what, you know, George W. Bush. Well, Cindy Sheehan tells the story really well. This was her, you know, under oath testimony before John Conyers' committee in the House of Representatives back. Geez, I think this was like in 2004, 2005. Here she is.
As a matter of fact, in interviews in 1999 with respected journalists and longtime Bush family friend, Mickey Herskowitz, then Governor George Bush stated, "One of the keys to being seen as a great leader is to be seen as commander-in-chief. My father had all this political capital built up when he drove the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and he wasted it. If I have a chance to invade, if I had that much capital, I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to get everything passed that I want to get passed, and I'm going to have a successful presidency," end quote. It looks like George Bush was ready to lead this country into an avoidable war even before he became president.
Yep, and it's true. It's true. So, you know, George W. Bush using veterans as props, right? Sticking a sock in his pants and flying onto the USS Abraham Lincoln and saying, "I'm here, I'm a tough guy." Yeah, right. Meanwhile, Senate Republicans throw veterans under the bus. This from 2012, 9/23/2012. This is $1 billion in funds to put veterans back to work. What did Tom Coburn say? Senator, no. He said, "What we have is a bill that's brought to the floor that has good intentions, but shows the absolute laziness of Congress." Right? There's no evidence that jobs for vets will work. 40 Republicans voted to keep Americans' veterans unemployed. Alexander, Ayotte, Barrasso, Blunt, Boozman, Burr, Chambliss, Coates, Coburn, Cochran, Corker, Cornyn, Crapo, or is that Crapo? I think it's Crapo. DeMint, Enzi, Graham, Grassley, Hatch, Hoven, Hutchison, Isaacson, Johans, Johnson, Kyle Lee, Lugar, McCain, McConnell, Moran, Paul, Ron Paul, Rand Paul, Portman, Risch, Roberts, Rubio, Sessions, Shelby, Thune, Toomey, Vitter, and Vicker. Those 40 Republicans voted no on $1 billion for jobs for vets. And then there's this whole, I'll go through the list after the break, a whole other long list of bills that the Republicans stopped.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Republicans basically see vets as useful idiots and as props. And by the way, so does Fox News and most of the right-wing media that's mostly made up of people who've never served. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. This is so shabby, the way we have treated our troops. I really think we need to start apologizing to them. Just, you know, right up front. Al, in Cathedral City, California, you want to push back on Lyndon Johnson having expanded the war in Vietnam? Really?
Yeah, yes, Tom, because haven't you read the Pentagon Papers?
No, actually, I did, but it was 30 years ago.
Yeah, and it's written like the Bible. You really have to be bright to disseminate it.
Yeah.
But it's there.
Well, it was a report for the Rand Corporation.
It was in the 1946 Republican Congress. They pushed the French. They didn't want the French to leave. Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening.
They pushed the French, didn't
Who's
want
they?
The French to leave, and then they told the French, if you leave, we're going to come in.
Who's they?
The Republicans in the 1946 Congress.
Huh. Okay.
You know, the
But the French didn't leave until the 50s, did they?
Pardon me?
I thought the French left in the 50s. Did they leave in 47?
Yeah, the French got driven out in 1953 at Dien Bien Phu.
Yeah, that was my recollection.
Right after the Eisenhower administration.
And then Richard Nixon.
$1 a day.
Yeah, Lamar Waldron was on this show a month or two ago. He's got a new book out called Watergate. And he was talking about how Nixon was, you know, pushing really hard to fill that void created by the French after they left in 54. And in fact, Eisenhower started putting troops in what, 55, 56?
Yes, that's about right.
Yeah.
But he was giving aid to the French at the tune of $1 million a day while they were still there.
Wow.
That was probably beginning the Truman administration, to be fair.
Yeah. But LBJ had the ability to stop it. And instead, what we got was Tonkin Gulf. So you can't say that LBJ is and
let him off the hook, perhaps.
Yeah, it doesn't get him off the hook. And when Lamar and I were writing that book on the Kennedy assassination, Ultimate Sacrifice, and Legacy of Secrecy, I tracked down Harry Enrique Ruiz Williams, who was one of the two leaders of the Bay of Pigs invasion, and was central to the plot to assassinate Castro that Bobby Kennedy was running out of the White House. This was not one of the CIA plots. This was a Kennedy plot, and it would have been successful. This was scheduled for December 5th of 63. Jack was assassinated 2 weeks before. And about 4 days before December 5th, must have been around December 1st, Harry and Bobby Kennedy and I think there was one other person I'd have to go back and look at my notes, but I interviewed Harry about this. I've got him on tape. And Harry met with Bobby, the attorney general, met with President Johnson, and said, you know, we need to go ahead and assassinate Castro. We've got everybody in place. This thing is all set to go. December 5th, let's make it happen. And Castro said to Bobby, he wouldn't talk to Harry. He said, get that effing Cuban out of my office. I've had enough with Cuba. Because at that point in time, he believed that Castro was responsible for killing Kennedy. He says, I've had enough of this effing Cuba stuff. I'm going to make my stand against democracy as far away as I can get. I'm going to do it in Vietnam. And he threw them out of his office, Bobby Kennedy and Harry Williams. And he kept to that. And it was a huge mistake. I think it was the most consequential mistake of the Johnson administration. But I get your point, Al. It didn't start with LBJ. Good point. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Great post over at by J.L. Finch over at Daily Kos. The headline is the GOP's actual track record on supporting veterans. And these are bills blocked by Republicans just since President Obama took office. And, of course, you know, Face the Nation, Meet the Press, none of them are going to cover these stories. So here we are. The rejected bills include H.R. 466, the Wounded Veteran Job Security Act. Republicans filibustered it. H.R. 1168, the Veterans Retraining Act. The Republicans shot it down. H.R. 1171, the Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program Reauthorization. Republicans shot it down. H.R. 1172, requiring a list on VA websites of organizations providing scholarships for veterans. Oh, no, that's too expensive, the Republicans said. H.R. 1293, Disabled Veterans Home Improvement and Structural Alteration Grant Increase of 2009. Wait a minute, we're going to give money to veterans to fix their homes up? That might stimulate the economy, which might look good for Obama. We can't have that. Republicans shot it down. H.R. 1803, the Veterans Business Center Act. Wait a minute, you want to help veterans start businesses? That might grow the economy, too. We can't have that when Obama's president. The Republicans shot that down. And similarly, H.R. 2352, same rationale, the Job Creation Through Entrepreneurship Act, which heavily focused veterans. And they go on. I mean, they voted against increasing VA funding. This was in 2005. There was $2 billion. Now, in 2005, we knew there were a hell of a lot of veterans coming back badly wounded by Iraq and Afghanistan, by George Bush's illegal, unconstitutional, criminal war crimes wars. He being the war criminal, George W. Bush, who yesterday was like, or the day before yesterday was like, oh yeah, I got no regrets. Really? You got the blood of almost a million people on your hands and you've got no regrets, you sick sociopathic. Anyway. $2 billion to rescue our ailing VA system as vets flood the system. Republicans said no. Here's what the Washington Post said, and I quote, Republicans beat back a Democratic attempt to provide almost $2 billion in additional health care funding for veterans, rejecting claims that the Department of Veterans Affairs hospitals are in crisis. This is 2005. This is during the Bush administration. VA hospitals are doing just fine. Yeah, right. And then, of course, there was that Republican donor. Remember Bobby Thompson? He raised $100 million. Ken Cuccinelli begged the guy for money and got $55,000 in donations. It was a scam. He raised $100 million to help veterans. It didn't so much help veterans. Little, if any, of the money was ever used as intended, according to the U.S. Marshals Service. The whole Walter Reed mess. Michelle Bachmann. She's proposing, conservative Representative Michelle Bachmann is taking heat from the nation's largest combat veterans organization for proposing as a broad, part of a broad list of spending cuts, a combination of reductions and caps in veterans benefits. $4.5 billion in cuts targeting veterans. This is Michelle Bachmann. What blows my mind is that if you tune into Fox News, you see Sean Hannity, who's not a veteran, or clips of Rush Limbaugh, who's not a veteran, or Karl Rove, who's not a veteran, or Megyn Kelly, who's not a veteran, or Bill O'Reilly, who's not a veteran. You see all these people who have never served their country. And, you know, not being a veteran myself, I can't vigorously attack them for that. But I don't sit around talking about how wonderful our veterans are. I mean, I have a lot of respect for our veterans. But I don't use the flag and militarism and all those symbols as a way of branding and promoting my show like these guys do. I mean, the right wing is all about, oh, yeah, troops, yeah. But when it comes to a time to funding something for them, oh, no, we can't afford that. We've got to have tax cuts for billionaires. So my suggestion, and I would love to get your thoughts on this and your thoughts on this Veterans Day. Here we are, Veterans Day. Is what do we do? When you see a veteran, should you say thank you for your service, or should you say, I'm really sorry for what this country did to you and your colleagues, and continues to do? By the way, we are in day two of our fundraiser for the Hunter School. The Hunter School is just doing spectacular work up in New Hampshire. You can read about it at hunterschool.org. And we need to put... a lot of the buildings were built back in the 70s. We need to put roofs on two buildings. We need to refurbish the kitchen. The greenhouse needs some work. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that needs to be done. So we're trying to, our goal for this week is to raise $100,000. $100,000. We should be able to do that on this program. And yesterday we raised $5,000. It's a great start. Thank you very much for your gifts yesterday. But we still have $95,000 to go over the next 4 days. So please call 603-786-2922, 603-786-2922. Even a $10 gift makes a big difference. I remember Richard. Richard had really bad temper tantrums. And his mother couldn't handle him. And he ended up in the state mental hospital in Concord, New Hampshire, and he was tied to a bed for a year and drugged up on Thorazine. They discharged him to us, and A, he was having seizures from the, it's called tardive dyskinesia, which is a neurological disease that people get when they take Thorazine for a year. So he'd get these twitches. But he also started doing these temper tantrums, you know, in front of Louise, me, and everybody else. And so we just started, instead of like freaking out or trying to restrain him or locking him up or giving him drugs, which is what they did at the mental hospital, we started applauding him. Hey, good performance, Richard. Now, let's talk about the issue. It was amazing how effective it was, actually. He took up the guitar. His public school teachers had been afraid of him. We had had to homeschool him for a year or so at the Hunter School at the Salem Children's Village. He ended up graduating with honors. I got some more Richard stories. I'll tell you after the break.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And then we'll take your calls on Veterans Day. But the number for the Hunter School in Salem Children's Village, 603-786-2922. Please call. The bad and the very, very insufferably ugly, the good. Students of Jefferson County, Colorado. For weeks now, this courageous group of high schoolers has been protesting an attempt by their local school board to make their AP U.S. history curriculum more, quote, patriotic. In other words, more conservative. Let's talk about Rush Limbaugh instead of Thomas Jefferson. On Thursday, they took their fight to the next level, interrupting a school board meeting by reading stories about civil disobedience and at one point reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. Check it out.
A strike threw Harvard University into turmoil. At the other universities, students occupied an administration building. Police were called in to clear them out, and a crisis followed that at Harvard.
For which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
There you go. As I always say, democracy is not a spectator sport. Tag Jefferson County students, you're in, and you're doing a great job. The bad. Breitbart, the conservative news site, is taking heat after running an erroneous story connecting Attorney General nominee Loretta Lynch to a Clinton-era scandal. And I put scandal in quotes, too, because it was another one of these Republican ginned-up nonsense hysterical. Anyhow, the story, which has since been deleted from the web, claimed that Lynch was a lawyer for Bill and Hillary Clinton during the so-called Whitewater investigations that looked into the then first couple of Arkansas's investment in a failed real estate company and, in looking, discovered that there was no there. Sounds pretty juicy, right? Well, not really, because Breitbart got the wrong Loretta Lynch. Loretta Lynch, who's probably going to be our next AG, is African-American and had nothing to do with Whitewater. The Loretta Lynch, who did work for the Clintons during the Whitewater investigations, on the other hand, is white, lives in California, and is definitely not going to be our next AG. Breitbart apparently confused the two, leading to what we in the industry like to call comic gold. But really, I don't know what's worse. The fact that conservatives are still talking about Whitewater, or that they apparently could give a rat's patootie about basic facts. And the very, very ugly war criminal George W. Bush. During an interview on CBS's Face the Nation Sunday, W. said he has no regrets about the Iraq War. Seriously. Check it out.
Do you have any regrets about that, Mr. President?
Well, no, I have regrets
I mean, do you ever feel that maybe it was the wrong decision?
No, I think it's the right decision. My regret is that a violent group of people have risen up again.
Instead of being on TV, this guy should be in the Hague testifying. That doesn't get your blood boiling. I don't know what does. That's very, very ugly. Okay, let me just finish up my Richard story. And this is, you know, one of the kids who went through our program. And after we got, you know, he had spent a year in the state mental hospital, tied down to a bed and drugged into docility. This is when he was about 11 years old and maybe 10. We got him probably, he must have been around 11. And he always wanted to have chickens, right? He wanted to be a farmer. So we got him some chickens. Unfortunately, one of them was a rooster. We didn't know that until it grew up. And it was our first experience with chickens, too. And that rooster used to chase everybody all over the place all the time until the neighbor's dog ate it, which, you know, kind of upset Richard, but not the rest of us. But Richard kind of came out of his shell with the chickens. And then he learned how to play the guitar, and he got quite good at it. And he went back to school, and he ended up graduating from the local high school in Plymouth, New Hampshire, with honors. I mean, this kid was just an incredible success story. Straight-A student. And, oh, and our program, the Hunter School, is a vegetarian diet. Vegetarian natural foods diet. Some kids are, you know, have food allergies and things that set them off, whatnot. This is a really, really good, healthy diet, overseen by a dietitian. And we have no television, which we consider to be electronic pollution. And Richard was so excited about this. His mom came up for a visit one time, and he tried to get her to eat tofu. She actually got angry with him. She was like, I hate tofu. He's like, no, mom, it's really good stuff. So, anyhow, please call now and make a contribution. 603-786-2922 is the number for the Hunter School and the Salem Children's Village. And we really need your help. With a $100 gift, you will get a T-shirt or an umbrella, your choice, that says Be the Light from the Be the Light Foundation. And with a $1,000 gift, you are more than welcome to come to Washington, D.C. and sit here in the studio with us and watch us do this show. Louise and I will take you out to lunch or dinner. Spend some nice time with you. It's just great meeting our donors and our helpers. So with a $1,000 gift, lunch or dinner here in D.C. You got to get here yourself, but we'll pick up the tab for the meal. So please call 603-786-2922 and make a contribution. This is tax deductible. We're coming up on the end of the year. This is our holiday fundraiser for the Hunter School. And they really need, I'm on the board of directors, an unpaid position, I might add. And we really need your help. The program really needs your help. And there's so much to do there. Louise and I have made a substantial contribution. Some of our other board members have helped out. Ellen Ratner's on our board, too. She helped out in a significant way. But, you know, we still need to put roofs on two houses, and we've got, you know, and we're trying to build we would love to raise a whole lot more than the 100 grand that is our goal here right now, because we'd like to develop a scholarship fund for some of these kids who just, you know, the school district will not, refer them. You got school districts that are broke. You've got parents that can't afford it, you know, all this kind of stuff. And we've really stretched things a lot of ways, which is one of the reasons why we're low on cash. So please help. 603-786-2922. And with a $1,000 contribution, Louise and I will wine and dine you here in Washington, D.C. Lunch or dinner, your choice. You can watch the TV show. You can watch the radio show. You can watch both. We'll spend the day with you. Okay, it's Veterans Day, in addition to being our wedding anniversary. And, in fact, if you'd like to give Louise and I a wedding anniversary gift, call the Hunter School and make a donation in our name. 603-786-2922. But I wanted to get your thoughts on veterans, on our veterans. Matt in Springfield, Virginia. Hey, Matt, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom, and happy anniversary. How many does this make?
I think it is, I'm pretty sure we were married in 71, which makes it, what, 43?
You better get this right.
Yeah. Well, Louise and I were sitting in bed last night talking about it, trying to, you know, like do it on our fingers and stuff, because it's like, you know, there's always that one year that you don't count that's the first year, so that, anyway, I'm not sure. In that neighborhood.
Good enough.
We're going out to dinner tonight at a nice little Greek restaurant here in town. That's always been our special food thing, so. Anyhow.
Most excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyhow. I think you're looking at it from the wrong way. Republicans look at veterans at first as heroes, but when we come to pay in benefits, we're just more moochers and takers. I've heard many times from Republicans that Well, you know, those veterans, they get overpaid and they get all those great commissary privileges and they're getting free food and free housing. We just become another noisy, you know, angry federal employee minority to them.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And in fact, there's one Republican who is promoting a meme that some retired guy is making over $100,000, which turns out not to be true. But double, triple dipping all this stuff Fox News talking about.
It goes on. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Matt, I think you're absolutely right. It's sort of like, you know, unborn children. It's like, okay, once they're born, to hell with them. You know, they don't need food stamps. They don't need education. They don't need housing support. Their mom doesn't need parenting training. We just want to make sure that the pregnant mother, and there was a great piece in the New York Times a couple days ago about how many hundreds of women around the United States have been arrested, criminalized for simply being pregnant. And I'm not even talking about abortion. And it's just, you know, the hypocrisy is mind-boggling. Matt, so our veterans, yeah, as long as they're out, you know, getting shot at, you know, hey, rah, rah, rah. But when they come back and they say, you know, I'm missing a leg and an arm and having a tough time, the Republican position is tough luck. Matt, thank you for the call. Gary in Coriopolis, Pennsylvania. Hey, Gary, got a quick one? We just have a minute.
Long time, Mr. Hartman.
Hey, Gary. Nice to hear your voice again.
Thank you. Greed has no heart. I'm going to say it. Greed has no heart ever.
Right.
Me and you get. I think me and you agree wholeheartedly on this. It's the ongoing cancer in America.
Yeah.
And I haven't forgot about George. I'm glad you brought George Bush into this. I haven't forgot about George Bush. Remember Lon Chaney? He's scary, wasn't he?
Yeah.
George, here's the record. I hope Mr. Bush is listening. Probably isn't. But in case you are, Mr. President, all due respect, you and Cheney drove America into the ditch and left the scene of the crime.
Yeah.
That's what you did.
Yeah, they did. And they also left over 4,000 dead Americans and over 30,000 wounded Americans and perhaps over 100,000 severely wounded veterans, when you include psychological PTSD, things like that, and several hundred thousand dead Iraqis and Afghans, and 5 or 6 or 7 million displaced people. This is a crime. Thank you, Gary.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm with Vince Bugliosi, who has a movie out now and a book, you know, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. But it's Veterans Day. Should we be apologizing to our veterans or thanking them? The Tom Hartman Program is a charity wine partner with the Organic Wine Company. They donate a portion of their proceeds to the Hunter School for Children with Autism, ADHD, and other learning challenges. The Organic Wine Company was started in 1980 by Veronique Raskin. Her mission is to share her passion for high-quality organic wine with those who enjoy wine. The Organic Wine Company works with winemakers from around the world to produce a wide variety of organic and low or no sulfite wines to complement the organic food on your table. More information at ecowine.com. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And John, watching Free Speech TV in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I would wish that we could go back and call it Armistice Day because, you know, that was the bloodiest war in history. And, you know, I also have a personal connection. My grandfather fought in World War One and ended up with what you would call shell shock at that time, but it's PTSD, and drank himself to death. And then my grandmother died a month after, and my father was orphaned. You know, that war had such a disastrous effect on generations of people. And if you ask people in the UK or in England, I think probably even in Germany, you know, when World War II started, they will say Armistice Day. You know, so I think we need to make that connection. And I remember my father would always buy those red poppies, you know, that they used to sell.
Yeah, my grandfather used to. My grandfather was a member of the Disabled American Vets. He he fought in World War One. He was a brand new Norwegian immigrant. And he went off and fought in World War One and came back wounded. And we used to go up to Newego when I was a little kid, which is where my grandparents lived. And Grandpa would march in the DAV part of the VFW parade down the main street of Dewego, Michigan. It's a little town of about 30,000 people, and if that, and always the red poppies. Always the red poppies.
Sixteen million men died, according to Wikipedia. Maybe that's exaggerated, but I doubt it. And 37 million people altogether, you know, suffered in that war. It was a disaster. I mean, and you know, the fields, that area between the lines, the forest grows very well there because, you know, essentially it is fertilized with the blood of these men.
Yeah.
And I think we need to think about that and keep it, you know, as Armistice Day, you know, and we can celebrate all veterans, but I would like to see it go back to have that connection.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. I agree. And I think most people, you know, I mean, it's unlikely that there's anybody alive today who actually remembers World War One, you know, who actually fought in it, because they would have been had to have been born 15 years before World War One, which would have been,
right,
you know, 1903 or something. So, you know, by now they'd be 110 years old, and I doubt there's anybody, you know, I'm guessing all the World War One.
You know, the descendants of people who fought in that war in, like, say, in England, I mean, there were so many people that died in a range of population that I think it was like 8% of the male population. And even today, people remember that war.
Yeah, yeah. The war to end all wars, as it was called, or the Great War. John, thank you for the call. Thank you for the call. We're not answering the question, though. Should we be thanking our veterans for their service, or should we be apologizing to them for the way the Republicans crap on them? Tom Harbin here with you, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Donald in Chicago. Hey, Donald, you're a veteran?
Yes, I am.
Your opinions on this?
My opinions, I would say thank them. Don't apologize, because the thing is those that have really been wounded, you know, that might make them feel, they'd like to probably feel to themselves that they did it for a patriotic reason, and I don't know how that would work on them. But
yeah,
the thing is what really gets me, Tom, is the fact that 58% of my fellow veterans voted Republican. I have a sister that works in a retirement home. A lot of them are World War II, Korean, and Vietnam veterans. When the Republicans won, they were applauding. They were cheering. You know, maybe they should understand the list that you read and all the things that the Republicans denied for them. That should be put out, and it should be put out by the Democratic Party. Let these veterans know that this is where they stand. And as far as I'm concerned, if the veterans want to know how the Republicans feel about them, maybe they should listen to Michael Savage's little clip. Too bad you don't have that on, but they should play that every now and then if you do, and let them understand how the Republicans feel about
you mean
them.
Where he's talking about the PTSD crybaby thing? Is that the clip you're talking
yes.
about?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. And I am so livid, because I got drafted in 66, and that was one of the biggest drafts there were. 58% of my fellow veterans voted Republican. That's a percentage point for every 1,000 GIs they left up on the wall. That's all that's left is them as their names.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sorry. They can call up and start screaming that about the way they feel. But much like all these other people didn't show up at the polls on the behalf of the Democratic Party that's working for them, well, you know, all I could say is you get what elections got consequences.
Yeah.
And we should let them know right off the bat who is responsible for this.
Donald, here is, apropos of Michael Savage, here is Michael Savage's little rant about the whiny veterans.
Everyone has depression in their life. Everyone has sickness and sadness and disease and loss of relatives and loss of career. Everyone has depression in their life. But if the whole nation is told, boo, hoo, hoo, come and get a medication. Come and get treatment. Talk about mental illness. You know what you wind up with? You wind up with Obama in the White House and liars in every phase of the government. That's what you wind up with. It's a weak, sick nation. A weak, sick, broken nation. And you need men like me to save the country. You need men to stand up and say, stop crying like a baby over everything. Stand up already.
Right. Right. We don't need no stinking support for injured veterans. Donald, thank you for the call. The ultimate irony, I would say, is that right now I'm looking at the CNN screen, and George W. Bush is on TV talking about his dad. Two war criminals. Two unnecessary wars fought largely for political purposes. Three wars, really. Afghanistan and two Iraq wars. And today's Veterans Day. George W. Bush, responsible for the death of over 4,000 American soldiers and the maiming, dismembering, and wounding and injuring of well over 100,000 American soldiers, probably several hundred thousand American soldiers, is being celebrated right now on CNN. Is there nothing more obscene than that on Veterans Day? Barbara in Bethesda, Maryland. Hey, Barbara.
Yes, Tom, I'll be very quick. You just made my point, except I was listening to NPR this morning, and they had a moving segment interviewing parents, Gold Star parents, you know, made me cry, you know. But then an interview with George W. Bush promoting his book.
I know, that was the point at which I turned it off. I'm serious.
No, I'm furious.
I was like, you know, this is sick and twisted that NPR would put George W. Bush on Veterans Day. It's an insult to our veterans.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But that's all I wanted to say, and thank you for reaffirming it and allowing me to blow off steam.
My pleasure, Barbara. Thank you for calling. Ralph in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Ralph.
Hey, Tom. I'm a veteran, a Vietnam veteran,
mm-hmm.
And George W. Bush disgusts me. I can't stand to watch him on TV because what they should do is send him to all these people, all these young men and women that he maimed and killed, and make him go to every grave in the national.
He wouldn't even let us see the pictures of the returning dead soldiers. It took Barack Obama to change that policy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how much he disrespected the troops. No, you may not see them.
But we talk about the Republicans. They do a good job of presenting themselves. They get by with some lies all the time, and they talk about the liberal news media. There's no liberal news media. They own the media's lock, stock, and barrel.
Yeah, no, about as close to it as you get is this show. You're absolutely right. And all they have to do, all Fox News and Sean Hannity have to do, is just, you know, play some patriotic music, wave some flags. And, you know, people just kind of fall into line, and then they go out and advocate cutting benefits for veterans. It's astonishing. Ralph, thank you for the call. Randall in Oceanside, California. Hey, Randall.
Yeah, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
I just want to go over something with you that I've been telling my girlfriend for years,
mm-hmm.
and that is that the Republicans can afford a lot of things. They can afford to send their children to college, so they want to raise the price for everybody else. They can afford Medicare, the Cadillac insurance programs, so they don't care if you all are out there without insurance.
Right.
But they don't have the money to stand an army, and that's where they depend on the taxpayers. And if you talk to most servicemen, they're Republicans, because while they're in the service, they get treated very well by the Republican Party. But as soon as they get out of the service, the Republicans basically kick them to the curb.
Yeah.
I'd like to know your take on that.
No, I agree. That's the whole point I've been making here, is that, you know, Republicans consistently fight any attempt to help out veterans, particularly wounded veterans, saying, oh, they're just crybabies. And Democrats have been working really, really hard to expand veterans benefit. I mean, the guy who's in charge of the Veterans Committee in the Senate is Bernie Sanders. You know, who's not a Democrat, but very, very progressive. It's like, you know, anyway, Randall, excellent point. Thank you very much for the call. This is the parallel I made to a couple of fertilized cells in a woman. And the whole right wing is out to protect those cells, right? But once that baby's born, screw them. Similarly, once you're in the military, they're with you. Once you're out of the military, forget it.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters: Identity Guard, Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And Dr. Alex McFarlane, Alex McFarlane is on the line. He's the director of Christian Worldview and Apologetics at the Christian Worldview Center, North Greenville University, Greenville, South Carolina. Talk show host to his radio program, Exploring the World. His website, Alex, A-L-E-X, McFarlane, M-C-F-A-R-L-A-N-D.com. Dr. McFarlane, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you, Tom. You're so gracious to have me and gracious to give the website. Thank you.
You're welcome. You wrote this piece, Election Results Show God Is Not Finished with America Yet. What's this?
Well, you know, I really believe that part of the victories that conservatives saw in the recent election was due to some grassroots movements on the part of evangelicals and the church getting more engaged in the electoral process. And, you know, there are a lot of us that are in the Christian realm that for a number of decades have been very concerned about things that we perceive to be America losing its spiritual heritage. And this goes all the way back to the 60s with the banning of prayer from public schools and more recently things like the...
Well, hang on just a second. Let's deal with these one at a time.
Okay.
Jesus was very clear in the Sermon on the Mount that if you pray out loud, God is not listening. He said, when you pray, you should go into your closet and close the door. He said, the people who pray out loud are hypocrites. So do you pray out loud? Are you a hypocrite?
For a show. No, I mean, all audible.
You don't pray out loud.
Hypocritical. Sometimes
Jesus said it was hypocritical. I thought you were a Christian.
Yeah, I'm a Christian, and you know that. Matthew 5 through 7, Sermon on the Mount, what he was talking about was those that do it just for a show and for a pretense.
He didn't say that. There was no just in that sentence. I've read it many times.
So in the Continental Congress, when Benjamin Franklin moved the room to have prayer and they audibly, verbally prayed out loud.
Benjamin Franklin openly ridiculed Christianity. He said, I have been absent from their, I forget the word, legions or whatever,
for all
of my life. He
at the Continental Convention there in Philadelphia, it was Franklin who said, if we don't believe that a sparrow can fall to the ground without God's knowledge, can we believe that a nation can rise up without the aid of providence?
I don't believe that Ben Franklin said that. I think it's one of David Talbot's made-up quotes.
Well, how about John Jay, the first, he presided.
John Jay was a Christian.
John
he was
Jay
also
was
our first Supreme Court
Justice. He said, it is the duty and privilege of us in this Christian nation to select and prefer Christians for their leaders.
You know, if John Jay was a hypocrite and you're a hypocrite, that doesn't, you know, that this whole idea that we should be praying in school when Jesus specifically said don't pray out loud makes no sense to me. Here's what I don't get, Alex, and this totally baffles me. Jesus said, you know, in Matthew 25, and you know this, in Matthew 25, the disciples finally came to him and just explicitly said, how do we get to heaven to be with you? It's the only place in the entire Bible where that question is asked. And he said, it's very simple. He said, feed the hungry, heal the sick, clothe the naked, which today would be, you know, house the homeless, you know, take care of those who are the least of the least. But he was very clear about it. And conservatives fight every single one of these things. Conservatives are the antichrists. They are the satanic influence in our society.
The Christians, well, you see, the reason that you have drunk the leftist Kool-Aid and that you believe that...
This is the Jesus Kool-Aid. I'm quoting Matthew 25, Alex.
Proof that America needs a reintroduction to Christianity, the faith of our founders. And what I mean in that piece about the election shows that God is not done with America is there's still a remnant of people, a large remnant, maybe 68 million, that really understand God and country. And we know that we were founded on
God and country. Jesus said, who's on the back of that coin? And the centurion said, Caesar. And Jesus said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's. Jesus was the original wall of separation between church and state guy.
Well, the man that coined that phrase, Roger Williams, a Baptist, who had said, in America.
I'm quoting Jesus.
Roger Williams said the wall of separation between the garden of the church and the Egypt of the world, God hath forever broken down. The way that people...
The phrase was coined in a letter from Thomas Jefferson to James Madison. Come on, is this more David Talbot revisionist history?
You need to understand, when Jefferson invoked that phrase, he was writing to the Danbury Baptist in Connecticut, and he was using a phrase quoting Roger Williams, trying to show solidarity with the Baptists to help them understand that the government...
Thomas Jefferson is not a religious figure. Thomas Jefferson openly eschewed religion. Thomas Jefferson took the modern, the New Testament, and cut all the miracles out of it, and that Jefferson Bible is still in print. You know, quoting Thomas Jefferson is not going
to... Fisher Ames wanted the Bible taught in public schools because Fisher Ames said that it was the best vehicle for teaching morals to young people. Now, think about this. How
it's
is
not.
It that you...
Wait a minute, Alex. Are you telling me that the book of Joshua, where God said, go into that town and kill every living person, cut off the king's head and put it in front of the village, cut open the stomachs of the pregnant women, kill the dogs, that is teaching morality? I mean, I guess that's what we did to the Indians. Maybe that's what he meant.
You've got to understand that the nation of Israel had the right to self-defense. Now, listen to this.
Right.
How is it that 21st century secularists like yourself understand?
I am not a secularist, Alex.
The man that wrote the First Amendment, better than the man that wrote the First Amendment. And the First Amendment says that the government will not obstruct the free exercise of religion, which is just what we've seen happen in a Houston mayor soliciting the sermons and speeches of pastors. We in America, one of our foundational freedoms...
The First Amendment does not say that. The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof.
So understand this, in spite of decades of public school that have been completely given over to a secularist anti-God agenda, in spite of minions in the media helping to try to portray this as a godless nation, there are a lot of people, who understand our religious freedoms. And we understand that those freedoms were based on belief in God and morality, and those freedoms have got to be...
Alex, very simple question. Very simple question. You know, the Republicans have flipped the five-pointed star upside down on their logo, which, as you know, is the satanic symbol. And if you read the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 25, or not the Sermon on the Mount, if you read Matthew 25, which I encourage everybody to read, you get it that Jesus said the only way you're going to get to heaven, in fact, everybody else who doesn't do this is going to, you know, be with the goats. They're going to go to hell. Is by feeding the hungry and healing the sick and housing the homeless. And, you know, just there's a simple giving water to those who are thirsty. Very simple list there. Conservatives oppose all those things. Please tell me why you and your ilk, you and the so-called conservative Christians, are not actually devil worship, the exact devil worshiping sheeps and wolves in sheep's clothing that John warned us about in 1 John 4.
Well, let me say this. There are two questions at play here. One is, what do conservatives really believe about social justice? I write about this in my book, 10 Issues That Divide Christians. And obviously, we understand, as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. understood, that because we're made in God's image, when I do good for a fellow human being, I'm honoring the one whose image you bear. But as far as the question of getting to heaven, what Jesus meant by that was that if we love people and feed the hungry and clothe the naked, that's not what saves us. It's evidence that God has moved in our heart.
That's not what he said.
John 8:24, Jesus said, if you do not believe I'm who I say I am, you will die in your sin.
That's a completely different quote. Read Matthew 25 if you want to try and quote Matthew 25. You're putting words in Jesus' mouth. That's another thing that John warned us, the Antichrist presenting himself as a Christian would do. I'm beginning to wonder, Alex, if you're the Antichrist.
Well, 1 John chapter 2 says, this is the spirit of Antichrist if you deny that Jesus has come in the flesh. So let me ask you a question, Tom. Jesus claimed to be God incarnate. Was he right or was he wrong?
I don't know,
yes,
Alex.
Or no?
I honestly don't know. And
I appreciate that. That's a good answer. I believe, let me say this, I believe that because of his miraculous life and his miraculous deeds.
But you're changing the subject away from Jesus' policies, which are contradicted by Christians.
Well, I would disagree because churches are at the forefront of social compassion.
I don't see that. I really don't see that. Anyhow, Dr. Alex McFarland, his website, alexmcfarland.com. Thank you, Alex.
Tom, you're awesome. Thanks.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour. Did we just talk to the Antichrist, really? And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Remarkable. Remarkable. What can I say? David, in Island Falls, Maine, watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
How you doing, Tom?
Great. What's up?
Well, anyway, I just wanted to just tell you that I just happened to watch Democracy Now! Of Amy Goodman, and she had Phil Donahue on, and he was talking about his documentary called The Body of War, which is about Thomas Young, who just died a couple of days ago. And it's a very, very, very in-depth documentary of the wounded veterans of the war and all that.
Right.
And also, I just wanted to just also tell you that there's in the Common Dreams, there was an article published on November 15, 2013, called A Trail of Tears, How Veterans Returned from America's Wars, which is, if you can check that out.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you. We salute our vets. We have parades for them. The Republican Party and Fox News and right-wing media exploit them mercilessly for their own political gain and to get them to vote for against their own best interests. And then, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, but what interesting, Tom, that in the documentary about Thomas Young, he said that when good men, I mean, the reason for the triumph of evil is when good men don't do nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Thomas.
And I just can't understand. I cannot understand. Well, like you say, why is Bush on corporate media coming out? You know, just coming out, being exposed himself. He should be like not involved in all this.
Right. Who did that documentary with Thomas Young? It was Phil Donahue, wasn't it?
That was the name of the documentary. It's called Body of War. It's
right.
On Netflix, and it's
it was Phil Donahue.
Phil Donahue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was on our show a month or so ago.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, talking about
did
that.
Did you see the documentary?
Back in the day, I mean, when it first came out, it was what, 3 years ago?
Yeah, a couple years. You're right.
Yeah.
A couple years ago.
Yeah.
I think that everybody should.
And Thomas was this, you know, just tragically wounded vet, as I recall.
He was like shot through the spine.
Right. He was a quadriplegic or a paraplegic.
Right. And the whole thing is that it's but these are all veterans. These are all the veterans. You know, like you say, like there's PDS and all that stuff. Like they're all wounded and all that. They're all mentally wounded and physically wounded.
Right.
So anyway, yep. I'll let you go.
Okay, thanks a lot, David, and thanks for reminding me of the movie, and it's sad that Thomas just recently died. Linda in Reno, Nevada, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Your dad was in Vietnam?
Yes, he was. He served two tours. He retired as a lieutenant colonel. I'm calling to say that whenever I see a soldier, and I've done this, we lived on military bases all my life, and I've always gone up to them and thanked them for their service. But the one thing that I found out recently, and I'm glad they brought it up, is Monsanto is finally on the hook, because that is what killed my father,
Agent Orange. I'm sorry to hear that, Linda. Thank you for calling and sharing your story with us. And yeah, I think thanking people for their service to their country, in arguably the most insanely dangerous job possible, is a good thing. I'm just asking, should we also be saying sorry? We'll be right back. It's Veterans Day and my wedding anniversary, Louise and mine. And she's here, actually. It's like, nice to have her in the studio with us. Carol in Palm Springs, California. Hey, Carol. Thanks for listening to 1450 AM. What's up?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to mention, when I first heard you say apologize to, I thought you were going to say the countries that we invaded, like Vietnam. That war changed my life, my whole an Agent Orange, you know, we don't realize what we've done to the other side.
Right. Yeah, we've got a lot of vets who are damaged by Agent Orange, but it was the Vietnamese that we dropped most of it on.
Oh, the Vietnamese. We're responsible for 3 million Vietnamese deaths.
Yeah.
But during that time, I was so upset because I thought that the North Vietnamese invaded the South Vietnamese. And I thought, oh, how horrible. We have to fight those communists. I'm 76, by the way. We have to fight those communists. So I started to read the history of Vietnam, and it was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
The division between North and South was when the French left.
Yep.
They needed 2 years to, you know.
A decent interval. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm very familiar with the history, and you're absolutely right. If we are, we need to apologize to our veterans for the way Republicans have been treating them for the better part of, three generations. And basically since Eisenhower. Eisenhower was the last president who got it above veterans. And we also need to, I agree with you, Carol, we need to be making right with the countries that we destroyed. Right now, the ones that should be at the top of the list are the ones that were destroyed during the Reagan administration and Reagan's illegal wars, Nicaragua, Guatemala, and El Salvador. And then on top of that, we need to be, making things right with Iraq and Afghanistan and some of the other countries in that region. It's just amazing what we have done with our military. Carol, thank you for the call. Clint in La Grande, Oregon. Hey, Clint, it says you want to disagree with me.
Yeah, sometimes when I listen to you, I wonder if you're clinically insane or just dumb, because
respectfully, I don't think I'm either. But, maybe you can convince me.
More soldiers in Afghanistan have died under Obama's regime. Some of the most serious violations against wounded vets have occurred in the VA under Obama's regime. He did nothing for 6 years. He started how many illegal wars? And you don't talk about him at all. And I think it's because he's a black guy and he's a Democrat.
Clint, I have not been at all shy to say, and I've said it many times on this program, that I believe that Obama's use of drones and drone warfare is illegal, which makes him a war criminal. I'll say it again. But that said, if you look at the problems with the VA during the Obama administration, there were 7 attempts by this administration and the Democrats to expand funding for the VA, to fix the problems at the VA, to give anywhere from $1 billion to $22 billion in various pieces of legislation that would have solved many of the problems of our veterans coming back. George W. Bush did not allow that to happen during his administration, and they were, all of those attempts were defeated by Republican filibusters in the Senate, every single one of them.
You're just flat wrong. You're just flat wrong about money being the problem. It was an administrative problem, and Obama did nothing for 6 years.
That's not true. I'm sorry.
It's simply not true.
Number one, and number two, money is a big problem. It's a very consequential problem in the Veterans Administration and for veterans programs. And what would you say, Clint, to the roughly 100,000 veterans who have now lost their long-term unemployment insurance because John Boehner refuses to allow it to come to a vote in the House where it would pass? What do you say to them?
The problem.
What all the other Republicans say to them?
In the Senate. No, Harry Reid shuts it down in
the
Senate.
No, it passed the Senate.
You know that.
Clint, it passed the Senate.
What other amendments were on that bill?
There were no amendments. It was a clean bill. The long-term unemployment passed the Senate. It was a clean piece of legislation. Did he just swear on the air? Oh, okay. Danielle, go back and flag Clint's phone number. Yeah, my apologies to anybody. I didn't even hear what he said. But anyhow, Marlene in Delroy, Ohio. Hey, Marlene, what's up?
Well, hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
I wanted to let you know that I think we should apologize to the soldiers. My son is a wounded warrior from the Iraq War, and he was planning on making the Army his career. But after being wounded, they wouldn't allow him to stay in the Army. He even said he'd be a cook. But, of course, those jobs aren't going to the Army anymore.
They've privatized him.
Right. So he's tried to work. He's been trying to go to school. But his anxieties and his war injuries, his pain, gets in the way of his everyday living activities. He was in Phoenix, Arizona for several years, and he was placed on a waiting list. And I started not believing him because I kept saying,
Marlene,
you're
hang on.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Marlene, I'm sorry we're out of time. I'm so sorry to hear about your son. I wish him the very best. Please give him our best regards. And thank you for sharing your story with us. Yes, time for our Borowitz Report, brought to you by Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com, or with permission of Andy Borowitz, I should say. He writes, Fox News announced on Wednesday that it is terminating its coverage of the Ebola virus effective immediately because, in the words of host Sean Hannity, our work is done. In other words, the election's over, right? Hannity commended the work of the Fox Ebola team, which provided nonstop coverage of the virus during the month of October, but added, this story is officially over. Fox's decision to bring its Ebola coverage to such an abrupt close raised eyebrows in media circles, but Hannity offered an explanation for the move after his broadcast concluded. Quote, there's like what, one case of Ebola in the United States, the host said, at most two or three? The point is the chance of any of our viewers catching Ebola are next to zero. We're not in the business of scaring people for no reason. Let's all move on. Hannity added that if there is an Ebola outbreak in the U.S., Fox would offer in-depth coverage of the crisis, probably in the fall of 2016. Yeah, as we go into the Republic. There you go. Thank you. Yeah. Ebola. Amazing. Okay. Veterans Day, religion, there's all kinds of stuff we've been talking. And there's a lot of other, you know, the failing weather infrastructure. You see this thing in the New York Times that we just lost another satellite. We're not really sure what's going on with weather. But the Republicans won't let us pay to put another one up. Got to keep those tax cuts for the Koch brothers, you know. James in Oak Harbor, Washington, watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. Hey, James, what's up?
Sir, yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just had a comment, a couple comments, actually. But the guy, the Antichrist.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus said, go forth and preach the gospel to all nations.
Right.
There's four gospels. He didn't say, go forth and preach Leviticus or something. I mean, I don't understand these people.
Right.
And now everybody hates Christians, and everybody's going the other way, and they're like, I don't need religion. I choose to believe that way. Because it makes me feel better. I believe there's a God, and I'll go to heaven when I die. And I don't think I could live if I didn't believe that.
Yeah. Well, and that's good. I mean, if that offers you solace, great. I'm personally not sure of heaven, but I am convinced that there's something much larger than any of us that we're part of, and that we came from, and that we go to. When we're done on this mortal coil, and that we can even get in touch with while we're here, if we're really, you know, committed to it. But that's just my personal theology, and I think Jesus was in touch with it.
Easier than therapy.
Yeah, there you go, James. Thanks a lot for the call. The Jordans in Frankfort, Kentucky. Hey, you wanted to disagree with me?
Things in the capital city today.
Well, there's a big parade in town, so it's mostly traffic jams. Bruce Springsteen is playing on the mall.
Well, I wanted to take issue with a statement I heard you make earlier. I believe you compared conservatives to the Antichrist, saying that they opposed Christ's commission to go out and feed the poor and do such things. And your basis for that was because they opposed funding that through the government, and somehow they're disobeying Christ's command. And I just couldn't disagree more. Just because I, another conservative, don't think that the government is the best method for helping the poor doesn't mean that we're disobeying Christ's command.
Right. Okay. Question. You ever read Matthew 25?
I have.
Okay. And you wanna just, you know, quickly summarize what it says?
Go and feed the needy and care for the dying, and that's the way to get to heaven. And I certainly believe that. I just think that the government is the only methodology for doing that, and I just completely disagree, and I think the country disagrees as well.
Yeah. Okay, do you remember the first words in that parable when the disciples come to Jesus and they say, well, in fact, here I'll read it from the King James, right? And let me see here. I've got to find the... Okay. For everyone, when the Son is just... Okay, here he is. He says, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then he shall sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations. And he shall separate the nations one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand and the goats on the left. Right? The sheep are going to heaven, the goats are going to hell. These are the nations. It's not you and me, it's not the individuals, it's the nations. Then shall the king say to them on his right hand, the sheep, the ones who are going to heaven, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came to me. And then shall the righteous answer unto him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe thee? See, the disciples are freaking out here. We've never seen you hungry. How can we get to heaven? And Jesus says, and the king shall answer and say to them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it to one of the least of these my brethren, ye shall have done it unto me. He starts the entire speech by saying the nations of the earth, not the individuals. We are a nation, and as a nation, we are either following these teachings or we are spitting in the face of these teachings. And I would submit to you respectfully that Ted Cruz and John Boehner and Mitch McConnell and George W. Bush and all these Republicans who think that we should not be offering food stamps to hungry, poor children, which is one quarter of all children in America right now, that we should not extend long-term unemployment benefits to people who can't find a job, including over, you know, hundreds of thousands of veterans, that we should not be providing free health care to people, or even not necessarily free, but whatever you want to call it, that we should not expand Medicare in all these Republican states, I would say to you that they are spitting in the face of Jesus. They are not Christians.
That's ridiculous. You're basing that off of the word nation, in which he is referring to all people.
No, look it up in the Greek. He's referring to nation states. Look it up.
Okay, give me, what Greek word did he use?
I don't remember, but I learned this. I learned this in seminary when I was studying to be a pastor.
I've been in church my entire life. I've read the entire Bible. I have not read it in Greek, but I've never heard anyone.
I am guessing that you went to a conservative church where it is not convenient to talk about the fact that Jesus was suggesting that nations should care for their homeless.
Quite the opposite. I went to a church where, like many, that preach to get out and serve the poor and go to prisons and visit people.
No, through the church. Not through the nation.
Through the church, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think I completely disagree with your interpretation of that one word, but if that's what you believe, I do appreciate that.
That's what I believe, and that I believe is the basis of most liberal social policy, at least Christian liberal social policy. And it's right there in black and white. I encourage you to read it. It's in Matthew 25. Thanks a lot for the call. Lance in Newport Beach, California. Hey, Lance, what's up?
Tom, happy anniversary to you and your beloved bride.
Well, thank you. Thank you very kindly.
how many years now?
I think 43, but I'm not sure. I can't do that math.
Oh.
Whatever it would be if we were married in 71, you can add it up. Or you could tell me, maybe. I don't know.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Why is it that the people who believe in small government wave the biggest government flags?
Because they are compensating. Why is it that the guys who have the smallest penises carry the largest guns?
Exactly. Remember the big kerfuffle when the president said he wasn't going to be wearing a flag pin on his lapel every single day of the week?
Yeah, and they all got hysterical about it.
The small government people got hysterical about it.
Yeah.
It's a government flag.
Right, right. Excellent. And in term, excellent point.
You know, I'm pantheist, so I have been, I like your style because you do what I do, which is to take the high ground, the moral ground. I was having a discussion on guns on Facebook with a great many gun owners. I said they're the most material people in the United States because all they really care about are the things of this world.
Well, and they're placing their trust in a piece of hardware.
Yeah, they got to protect, you know, the family, the kids, the gopher, the...
What happened to trust in the Lord?
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero.
Or trust in society, or trust in your fellow man or woman.
Well, why did Jesus just give up at Gethsemane? Why didn't he fight?
Right.
He could have. That's what I understand.
No, but he knew that the path of Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi was the most powerful path, and 2,000 years have proven it.
Precisely, and I have been an aspiring pantheist ever since I read Gandhi's biography when I was like 17 years old.
Yeah, well, there's a large chunk of pantheism in Hinduism, and
absolutely,
and Gandhi was a Hindu. And you know, the other great pantheist tome is Daniel Quinn's books, Ishmael and My Ishmael.
I'll have to read it.
You have not read those?
No, sir.
Oh my God, Ishmael! It's a novel, and it's this guy sees this ad in the newspaper that says, "Do you want to save the world? You know, come by this place." He goes by this place, and there's this gorilla who talks with him. And he becomes the student of the gorilla, and the gorilla tells him the story of the human race from the point of view of a species that is older than humanity. And he tells the whole history of the human race and how we and it's the most brilliant exposition of pantheism and how we've screwed it up. Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. You really need to read it, Lance. You'll love it. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And don't forget, the Salem Children's Village and the Hunter School, we're doing our fundraiser. We need your help. 603-786-2922. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Todd in Denver watching Free Speech TV on Roku. Hey, Todd, what's up?
Hey, how are you, Tom?
Good.
First time I've actually got the connection with you. It's been years now, but I've been counseling veterans. I'm a veteran myself. And there's a difference. There's the rear echelon, and then there's infantry. Us infantrymen consider everyone else support. Served in Korea. But I've been counseling veterans and people in recovery for a while. And there's a tool that I've been using that is, it kind of names these Republican types. It really exposes their secular nationalism tinge. You may have heard of this called the Enneagram.
Are you talking about the Enneagram as that phrase is used by Scientologists or as that phrase is used by followers of Gurdjieff?
Well, the Enneagram, great, you've heard of this. Well, there's a gentleman, Father Richard Rohr, and his book's been pretty popular. The title of this is Enneagram, A Christian Perspective.
Uh-huh.
Now, and Enneagram in the mainstream, even the type that's been used to help IT companies pair people to work together more efficiently. Just looking at type one, you get this expose.
Okay, so you're talking about the personality profiles that Gurdjieff and Ouspensky came up with back in the day.
Yes, there you go. That name is resonates.
Yeah.
So when
P.D. Ouspensky.
When you look at the Enneagram one, and you wonder why Republicans, they seem to have this kind of party discipline, or they have this similar speech. It's all about their self-image.
And this tool is great when you're slowly able to tease out some of these aspects without telling someone, hey, you're this type. But, you know, it's a cry for help. And I hear this gentleman talk, and I hear other conservatives using words like remnant and trying to use, you know, it's great to watch. It was great to listen to you just kind of tease out. Once upon a time, Democrats and people that didn't quite agree with this fundamental perspective weren't able to really assimilate what they were talking about. And it's great to hear that. And I wanted to offer that tool. I'm going to have to read Ishmael now.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned it.
Yeah, Ishmael's incredible. Yeah, and are you familiar with the Myers-Briggs test?
Yeah, that was, I don't know if a company's been using it, but any of those tools have been real useful.
Yeah, Myers-Briggs was, you know, it's based largely, largely on the work of Carl Jung. I think Carl Jung would be a little horrified by standardized testing, but particularly the introversion extroversion scale of, you know, measures four different basic axes of personality types. And there was a big fad in the 90s, 80s and 90s, where businesses were using them to come up with, you know, teams matching people together. And sometimes some companies were like opposites are work well, and others were no, you get people who are very similar. But there have been a lot of attempts to try and kind of figure out who we are and how we are. But it seems to me that the most important thing is to just acknowledge that we are, right? to be with each other. So, but the Enneagram is a fascinating thing. Todd, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the end. For the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and excuse me. Just a reminder that we are this week trying to put a couple of new roofs on some of the buildings up at the Hunter School, and we need your help. Small amounts are wonderful, 10, 20, 30 bucks, great. With a $100 contribution, we will pass along an umbrella or a T-shirt that says "Be the Light." And with a $1,000 contribution, you can come to Washington, D.C., and Louise and I would be glad to, you know, you're welcome to come hang out with us as we're doing the radio or TV program, and we'll take you out to dinner or lunch, your choice. So please call 603-786-2922, 603, the New Hampshire zip code, 786, the Rumney phone number, 603-786-2922. Anonymous in Texas. Hey, Anonymous. Right. I'm assuming you're anonymous as opposed to you are the group.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. What's up?
Yeah, I heard you talking about it. It was an interesting conversation you had with the Antichrist, Alex McFarland. He got you kind of excited, and I'm afraid that I will too, in a little different way. The reason I called is I'm very anti-military, most veterans, I don't respect veterans, and although I think the government should do what they said as far as supporting their benefits.
Well, hang on just a second. Let me ask you a really simple question. You get some kid who's 17, 18 years old, you know, out of Kentucky, no job opportunities, nothing, joins the military, you know, as a career path, as, you know, hey, I can get a college education this way, it's a job. I can send money back home to my wife. You know, we can have a family someday. There's good long-term benefits. Gets dragged off to Iraq or Afghanistan because George Bush lied us into a war. Comes back, you know, paralyzed. How could you have anything other than compassion and respect for a person like that?
They made the wrong decision to begin with. There shouldn't be an incentive to join the military.
But there is.
I mean, you're asking me, and I'm
saying we need to separate veterans from the policies that veterans follow.
No, because it's a volunteer military, and because it's voluntary, this means that they made their choice. And yes, I don't want anybody to get hurt, and I don't want war, But I also don't want fighting instead of compromise. And you can't get the peace through war. And all we're doing is supporting the corporations. And it goes on. I just disagree with what veterans do and the type of thinking. It's almost like police thinking. Yes, I understand the case that you've brought up.
I'm just saying, you know, a good number of them. I wouldn't disagree with your point if you're talking about some guy who goes through ROTC and goes into the military as a second lieutenant and ends up a lieutenant colonel, and you know is then later on in his life ends up as a shill for a defense contractor on TV or something like that. Those folks have my disdain, I guess, would be the proper word.
I
think that we really need to separate the people who, you know, the kind of the professional military from just the average kid who's looking for a job or just desperate to get out of some.
Couldn't the government give incentives for infrastructure and
we should. We should bring back the CCC and the WPA. I've been saying, you know, Charlie Rangel and I have been saying on this program for 10 years now that we should bring back a draft where you serve your country for a year. It doesn't have to be in the military. Half, two-thirds of them could be volunteering in hospitals, schools. You know, there's all kinds of important stuff that needs to be done around the country. And then in exchange for that, you get 4 years of college or trade school.
Well, that's fine. That's a lot better than the way it is now. But again, I'm not better off because of any of these wars, Afghanistan, Iraq, since Korea. Unless somebody was drafted, I don't think I should have to respect them.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. I really believe that we need to separate the people from the policies. But I understand your point. Thank you for the call. Bob in Clifton, Tennessee. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Take a deep breath now and be sure you punch your timer there, because the last time we spoke, after a minute and 15 seconds, you said it was 3.5 minutes.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, so please. I would just like to comment on veterans. You know, during wartime, it is routine to dehumanize the enemy.
Yes.
And give them names and such. Well, I think we also do it to our own military people as well. We call them troops. Now, I think that it is possible to truly support the people in the armed services if they are considered victims who are trapped by cultural mythology, custom, economic draft, promises, propaganda, and their own good intentions.
This is the point I was making to the previous caller.
Yes, and not call them troops, because this dehumanizes them.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. That's an excellent point. And I don't think I've said troops today. I've said soldiers. And
that's
correct.
I agree, and you're right on.
And I realize the correct term is soldiers, sailors, airmen, and marines, or whatever it is. But you get what I mean. You know, our uniformed personnel.
Certainly.
Yeah, Bob. Excellent point. Thank you for calling and making it. Tony in Mesa, Arizona. Got a minute, Tony? What's up?
Oh yes. Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Really quick on the response to our returning vets. I think that we should engage in both conversations. I think we should thank them for their service, but then use the other part to inform them as to what has happened in this country in terms of their benefits, et cetera. Because I think the problem that we have, Tom, is that we as Democrats don't have an infrastructure to get our message out. I was so disheartened by last Tuesday's faith plant. And I know the problem is these people are only hearing what they're hearing. We do not have the billionaire infrastructure that it's going to take in order to change hearts and
minds. If the Supreme Court had not declared that money was speech, we wouldn't need it. We would have a level playing field. But the Supreme Court has turned us into an oligarchy, and it's a terrible thing. Tony, excellent point. Thank you for coming.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a quick reminder, we're doing our fundraiser for the Hunter School all this week. The number is 603-786-2922, 603-786-2922. Please make a donation now. Catherine Miles is with us. She's the journalist and author of Superstorm, 9 days Inside Hurricane Sandy. Her website, Catherine, K-A-T-H-R-Y-N, Miles, M-I-L-E-S .net. And Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for having me today.
Thanks for joining us. Tell us about our broken or failing weather infrastructure. What's the story here?
Well, this is sort of the surprise plot line that came up when I was researching what I thought was a book largely about Hurricane Sandy, and the book was about that. But in my investigative reporting, what I uncovered was a really sort of badly, chronically underfunded weather system in our country that over the decades has become a real crisis of personal safety and, frankly, national security.
Yeah, you wrote a brilliant piece for the New York Times back, what, about 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago?
Mm-hmm.
Our failing weather infrastructure, laying this out. Do you want to give us some of the details?
Sure. I mean, going back about 40 years, when NOAA was founded, it was under President Nixon. And this is a somewhat apocryphal story, but true as far as I can tell. He was angry about his Secretary of the Interior stance on the Vietnam War. And so rather than locating the National Weather System Service and NOAA in the Department of Interior, which was a much more logical fit, what he did was he located it within the Department of Commerce. And ever since, what we've seen is a lot of sort of bureaucratic wrangling, sort of political give and take that's left NOAA really underfunded. And as technology develops, as our need for information and data develops, the NOAA system as a whole has been crumbling. And so now we're in this infrastructure crisis where we have weather satellites that are long past their predicted lifespan. We may have a weather satellite gap. We have these repeated outages in terms of the weather network. Just last summer, an Android app literally crashed the National Weather Service page. And so what we have is these very talented meteorologists, very underfunded, dealing with outmoded equipment, and often not able to predict our weather in a way that they could if we actually funded the program.
And then on top of that, we're in an era of global warming where the weather is getting weirder and wilder and more dangerous.
That's right. That's right. And what they are telling me is everything we thought we knew about storms is changing. And so we have things like the USGS reissuing flood zone maps. We have new technology that we need in terms of anticipating storm surge. We have things like tornadoes in places where we don't usually have them. And again, we have these meteorologists who can't necessarily tell us what they need to, because of the sort of political wrangling that's happened.
Yeah, you said that in the 20 years leading up to Hurricane Sandy in 2012, the United States suffered 133 weather disasters, each exceeding $1 billion in damages for a total of $875 billion. What's the cost to beef up our weather infrastructure so that we can warn people about such things?
That's a great question. And it's, you know, it's really a sliding scale. It's what are Americans willing to pay to invest? If you look at right now budgets for things like NASA defense satellites, those are exponentially higher than the budget for our weather satellite program, our so-called civilian weather satellite program. One of the most shocking things I encountered was the fact that the National Weather Service currently has about 400 unstaffed positions, more, in fact, that we had even when Sandy hit. And these are high-level forecasting technology type positions. We have one surge expert at the National Hurricane Center responsible for predicting the surge for the entire country. So there's multiple funding lines here that we really need to think about. We need to think about technology. We need to think about staffing. We need to think about preventive mechanisms that we can put in place that will save the lives of Americans.
The military, you know, is fighting wars in parts of the world where they have to know the weather. How do they get, you know, weather information, weather forecasts in, for example, Afghanistan and Iraq?
Well, we have weather satellites that are run by the military, and that's part of the problem, really. When you think about these polar orbiting satellites, which have recently been put on the GAO watch list as one of the most sort of like precarious federal systems that we have here. We have these two weather satellites that are our so-called civilian weather satellites. They orbit around the planet each day and provide these sort of like broad stroke images that we use for our long-range forecasting. Those are the two satellites that are past their lifespan. We're already, because that's happening, we're already relying on some of these military satellites to provide some of the civilian forecasting. But meanwhile, you know, the funding keeps going to the Department of Defense and NASA. And then meanwhile, NOAA is kind of left behind.
Should we, you know, given that most Republicans and some Democrats are kind of the mind that whatever the military wants, they get, just throw money at them. But when it comes to anything else, the, you know, civilian stuff, it's like, oh, wait a minute. We can't endanger the tax cuts for the Koch brothers. Might it not be politically a wise idea to lobby to move NOAA under the DOD?
That's a very controversial question, and I think there are some people who see that as a great solution. I frankly like the idea of putting it under the Department of Interior. I think it's living with, you know, the types of organizations and programs that I think we really need. I don't think it needs to be a military program. I think there's a lot going on with weather that's sort of independent of the military. I'd like to see it kept separate just because I don't think we need a militarized weather system, but that would be probably one way to secure funding.
Yeah, remarkable. What do you know about what the next Congress will, in all probability, do with regard to the deficiencies in our weather system?
I don't think we know. I think that probably, you know, we're going to be looking at additional cuts. I think probably we're going to be looking at, again, this sort of skewed focus on military expenditures rather than weather expenditures. And, you know, I think really this is a chance for like sort of good old fashioned grassroots democracy. If, you know, we as residents and citizens feel like the weather is important to us, I feel like we really have this sort of moral and ethical obligation to start demanding that we're being taken care of as well as the military is being taken care of in terms of weather expenditure.
Yeah, yeah, brilliantly said. Kate Miles, the website Catherine Miles, KATHRYNMILES.net. Kate, thanks so much for dropping by today and for writing a brilliant piece for the Times and for all of us.
Oh, it really was my pleasure. Thanks so much for the work that you do, too.
Thank you. Great talking with you. Just a quick reminder, the Salem Children's Village and the Hunter School, 603-786-2922. Or you can go to hunterschool.org, and you can donate right on the website, hunterschool.org, or call 603-786-2922. Help us put a couple of roofs on these buildings. We need to get this done. This is a program that is doing spectacular work with children who are suffering some of the greatest challenges. I mean, just imagine having little control over your body or how your brain works and being a child. And what Hunter School does is it teaches kids how to regain that control, in large part through something called energetic mindfulness, which is like just being aware of being present. Notice what you're seeing, what you're hearing, what you're feeling, and just be present. Here now, right here. What time is it? It's now. Where are you? It's here. It's an incredibly powerful, I mean, that's a super simplistic perspective on it, but energetic mindfulness, we have found, is just an incredibly successful therapeutic modality, as it were, for kids with Asperger's, with autism, with ADHD, this whole spectrum of, quote, disorders that we see as neurological differences and, in many cases, neurological advantages. So please help us and help these kids. 603-786-2922. 603-786-2922. Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
With a $1,000 contribution, you can come to Washington, D.C. and hang out with Louise and I for the day. And with a $100 contribution, they'll send you a T-shirt or an umbrella for your choice. Welcome back. Irene, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Jacksonville, North Carolina. You are on the air, Irene. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call, and happy anniversary to you and your wife.
Thank you.
Getting back to the question on how we should greet our returning vets, I believe that we should thank them for their service. They went into the service with a pure motive to protect the country and put their lives on the line. But I think that we should add something special to our Vietnam vets. My husband served 4 tours of duty in Vietnam. He was a volunteer. He was not drafted. And he was badly wounded while he was over there. And when he came back to this country, he was treated like a pariah. Mm-hmm. So for all of those Vietnam vets out there, welcome home.
Yeah.
That's what they want to hear because they never got it.
Yeah. Yeah, there was no ticker tape parade. You're right. And I lost several good friends in Vietnam, and I knew a lot of people who came back from Vietnam broken. I knew others who came back from Vietnam, you know, in good shape, and they had learned from it, and it had been, you know, an experience that became part of their lives. But war is a very, very, very consequential thing, and we need to, you know, think very carefully about it before we send our young men and women off to war. Rather than just, you know, sit around like George Bush did in 1999 and say, you know, if I have a war, it'll help me get reelected in 2004. And please, to your husband, tell him that I said welcome back and thank you for what you did. And my apologies for our country having sent you there in the first place. Irene, thank you for the call. Horacio.
Yeah, good morning, Tom. I want to tell people what the Republicans and conservatives, what they really think about our veterans. Mm-hmm. Private Bergdahl.
Oh, yeah.
The only name I got to say.
Bo Bergdahl, yeah.
How did they treat him?
Yeah.
How did they treat him?
They were hysterical that he came back. They were very unhappy because Bush traded some people from Guantanamo for him. How dare he?
Yeah, remember, if he would have been there 2 more weeks, they would have cut off his head. He would have been a prime example. Yep. And look, and his family, him, come on, really?
Yeah.
And then a lot of these senators that were saying, why did we trade them? They're right there. They're still sitting right there. They're there, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It's just incredible. They have, you know. But that's all I want to just remind people about Private Bergdahl and what he went through.
There you go. Thanks, Horacio. Michael in Imperial Beach, California. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Mr. Hartman, again, happy anniversary to Luis and yourself.
Thank you.
About Dr. Alex McFarland in religion, mm-hmm. Do you think from a religious point of view that free will trumps God's powers? Now, if God knows everything, then in theory, God made all the angels. Then that would mean God made Lucifer, which would mean if God knows everything, he must have known that Lucifer was going to be a pain in his side, a thorn in his side. So did God, when he made the angels, give the angels free will like he gave humans? What do you think, Tom?
Your construct conflicts with my personal epistemology, but that said, I honestly don't know. I mean, there are a lot of theological questions that I have no certainty about. I don't know. I have feelings, I have opinions, but I don't have knowledge, and I certainly not enough to inflict on other people. Michael, thank you for the call, but I just can't tell people how to believe. 20 minutes past the hour. talk media for the sane among us. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Jeff in Taos, New Mexico. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
How are you doing?
Pardon?
I just want to respond. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, there you are. Okay, sorry. I think I have a weak signal. No, I just want to respond to your anonymous caller. We did not support the troops. I'm an Iraq war veteran myself. I'm also anti-war. I've been spending the last 10 years of my life also involved in the anti-war movement, anti-militarism. You know, but I think I understand his point of view. I've seen it a lot. I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I'll say this. It's important to realize it's what we call an economic draft. It's like you said, you know, you got poor kids who they come out of these small towns and they just want to step up in the world for themselves in an economic way. None of the guys that I serve with, my buddies, none of them really joined for some patriotic need to serve. It was always because they needed the money or get out of their dead-end town. Yeah. You know, and I think what I find very interesting about this subject is a good friend of mine, Thomas Young, just died yesterday. The irony of which, you know, he died right before Veterans Day.
And, you knew him, the young man that yes. Phil Donahue did the documentary about.
Yes, yes, he was a member. I joined when I got out in 2004. I joined Iraq Veterans Against War. So he was a good ally of mine, and it's really sad. And it's a really tough subject for a lot of us right now in our organization. But, you know, the irony is not lost on me that he died the day before Veterans Day.
Yeah.
And, you know, he joined when he was a kid, very young, had his spine shattered by a sniper's bullet. You know, he came home and he spent the last 7 years of his life fighting against militarism.
Yeah.
So I would just say, you know, for the anonymous caller who does not support the troops, yeah, I get it. You know, you're against militarism. But you have to distinguish between the two. I mean, some of the most hardworking anti-war activists I've ever met in my life are veterans.
Right. Well, and let's not forget, I mean, one of our most outspoken anti-war presidents was Dwight Eisenhower, who led the invasion of Normandy in World War II. You know, was in charge of the European theater for everybody, you know, for all at least all the Allied forces, and supreme commander of the Allied forces in World War II. And he came back and ran on a platform. In fact, Shane, maybe you've got that clip. This is the ad that Dwight Eisenhower ran on national television in 1952 when the Korean War was going on, Harry Truman's war. And Dwight Eisenhower said, I'm not in favor of war. We're going to end this war. And here's the ad that he ran.
He has met Europe's leaders, has got them working with us. Elect the number one man for the number one job of our time. November 4th, vote for peace. Vote for Eisenhower. A paid film.
And I think the last time we had a president who basically said vote for peace was Obama when he ran in 2008 saying that he was going to end Iraq and Afghanistan.
You know, some of the most, you know, championed anti-war crusaders have been veterans. I mean,
yeah, like Eisenhower.
Bringing up all the time, Smedley Butler.
Yep.
The most decorated officer in military history. Anti-war author Kurt Vonnegut. Anarchist thinker Peter Kropotkin. I mean, so many staunchly anti-war, anti-imperialists have served.
Yeah, I think Howard Zinn served in World War II.
Howard Zinn, yeah, he was a bombardier.
Yeah.
It's
Eugene McCarthy. Was it Gene McCarthy? No. Who was it who ran against Nixon in 72?
McGovern?
Yeah, McGovern. Thank you. George McGovern. Yeah. McGovern was a bomber pilot in World War II, flew 34 missions, and in one he had a plane that was so badly damaged that he had to make an emergency landing in an Air Force base or in a landing strip in Italy that was way too small for his plane. And numerous people had tried using it, and they just wiped out their planes. And McGovern succeeded in saving the plane and saving his crew. I mean, he was a true World War II hero. And that combat experience convinced him that war should be the very last option.
Yeah, I understand the perspective being, you know, involved in the anti-war left for the last 10 years of my life.
I've seen this opinion come up a lot. And I, like I said, I don't agree with the stance, but I will say that people who espouse that opinion, I feel, based on my experience, they come from a very privileged point of view, where they haven't been in that same situation. And I don't know, to hold it against a young kid. And again, I'll say again, like Thomas Young, how ironic that he died the day before Veterans Day, you know, passed away in his sleep. You know, he was one of our best crusaders against war in Iraq, veterans against the war. So, I mean, it's, like I said, it's a tough moment for us, and I don't usually want to call in on these shows, but I feel like on this day particularly, that opinion needs to be challenged.
Yeah.
And I would suggest looking up his life's work, Thomas Young.
Yeah.
Looking up the Combat Paper Project. We still have veterans. Some of the smartest people I know in the anti-war movement are veterans. And now they're working on the healing aspects. You know, 22 veterans die a day, commit suicide. And they're confronting that now.
Mm-hmm.
Just look up some of the great work in the anti-war movement as being championed by veterans. And then come at us with that same opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. 22 vets commit suicide every day. It's like almost one an hour.
I think you break it down like that. Yeah.
Yeah. That is tragic. That, you know, it demonstrates another great failure, you know, of our military policy. George W. Bush, he declared two wars and didn't have a single meeting about what do we need to do about the VA for when these people come back. Now, his rationale is that they didn't expect that the wars would last any more than 2 weeks. And they thought that the Iraqis were all, you know, that freedom was going to break out. And this was going to be the proof that libertarianism works. If you get rid of big government, in this case, the big government of Iraq, that there will be a flowering of the private sector. But still, he didn't do bupkis. Jeff, thanks for the call. And thank you for your service. And my apologies for the horrors of war that were inflicted upon you. Thank you for calling. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And we're raising money for the Hunter School. The number is 603-786-2922. Please call now and make a donation. 603-786-2922. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Hey, remember Tad Devine? He used to pop up on TV after elections because he worked with Al Gore, John Kerry, and Mike Dukakis. Bernie Sanders just hired him, according to the news reports, for his presidential bid. This from the Washington Post. Senator Bernie Sanders has spent months fishing for a strategist to guide his potential 2016 presidential campaign. On Monday, he hooked a big one. Tad Devine, one of the Democratic Party's leading consultants and a former high-level campaign aide to Al Gore, John Kerry, and Michael Dukakis. They had apparently worked together on Sanders' campaigns back in the 1990s. And they have been huddling in recent weeks, mapping how the brusque progressive senator could navigate a primary and present a formidable challenge to Hillary Rodham Clinton. This is going to get interesting. This is going to get really interesting. Okay, time for our pigeon alert for the day. No? We can do it later if you'd prefer. No? We've got it? Here we go.
Look, up in the sky.
It's a bird.
No, it's a plane.
We are autonomous robotic organisms from the planet Xenu.
And now, a story about a bird.
Okay, this bird is the dodo bird, the Raphis calaculus, or calictus. It was previously named Didus ineptus. It looked plump and clumsy, is the phrase. The last dodo was seen in 1662, so you have never seen one in person. But apparently we drove them extinct, and we being humans. But now they've applied 3D laser scanning technology to study in detail the only complete skeleton of a dodo bird that anybody has. They've reconstructed how it walked, moved, and lived. And that led to a complete biological examination saying that the dodo is related to the pigeon. So could it be the dodo birds aren't around anymore because they were the original spies from the planet Xenu? You know, technology moves forward and things get smaller and more miniaturized. dodo birds were big. They're about the size of a pelican. And so, you know, they came down from the planet Xenu in 1662, and they sucked up all the dodo bird robotic spies and dropped a bunch of pigeons. What do you think? Yeah, probably don't, right? Okay. Judy in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, Judy, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I was calling about the discussion about whether government should be involved in helping the needy or including veterans versus having charitable groups do it. Mm-hmm. And there are so many reasons why I think the government should be involved. But right now, especially, because government caused so many of the problems. Our government sent people to war. Our government adopted disastrous economic policies that put all these people in this position to start with. So why shouldn't the government be helping?
Yeah. And beyond that, the total amount of private church-based charity in the United States last year was around $5 billion. And
yeah,
that is just a screaming drop in the bucket. I mean, you know, it's just a drop in the bucket. So
yeah, and a lot of groups have already run out of money and can't even help anymore.
Yeah.
So
yeah. It's so true. Judy, thank you for the call. Well, excellent point. Joe in Hamilton, Ohio. Hey, Joe, thanks for listening on the Tom Hartman app. What's up?
Hi. Well, a lot of things are up. I called in because I heard your interview with Alex McFarland, and I wanted to comment on that. I am a Christian. I'm a flawed individual, but I am a Christian. I go to church, and I just don't know that I don't feel represented in Congress, and that's one issue. But even a lot of the Republicans in Congress who say they're Christian, and I believe them when they say they are, I don't feel represented as a Christian because of how they cherry pick things in and out of the Bible to further an agenda that does not sound like something that a religious person would want. Like that's what you touched on. The Republican agenda using Christianity to affect things anywhere from the environment, when we should be, we're called to be good stewards of the earth, and we're not, to health care, something like some people I know, women who have health issues, that has nothing to do with pregnancy, but reproductive issues, where some of these medications that could be banned or being banned in some parts of the country if voted on.
The vast majority of hormonal birth control pills are not used for birth control. They're used to regulate menstrual cycles and to deal with those kinds of problems.
To deal with, and the people I know, I'm talking about people who have constant migraines, who have ovarian cysts. Those
right.
medications help deal with that.
Yep.
But back to the poor, which is the conversation that you had with Mr. McFarland, I think Stephen Colbert summarized it best when he said, if this is going to be a Christian nation that doesn't help the poor, either we have to pretend that Jesus was just as selfish as we are, or we've got to acknowledge that he commanded us to love the poor and serve the needy without condition.
Joe, turn me up. Joe, let me stop you. You must have put your thumb over your microphone or something, because the last sentence that you said just sounded like it came out of the bottom of a soup can. Try it again.
I'm so sorry.
Okay, you sound good now.
He said the end of the sentence, we've got to acknowledge that he commanded us to love the poor and serve the needy without condition, and then admit that we just don't want to do it.
Yeah.
I feel like the Republican Party has hijacked my religion, and their response to the president being elected was, I want my freedom back. I want my country back. I want my religion back from those who have created a very bastardized version of it to further an agenda that doesn't, to me, seem like it really flows well with Christian theology at its
I absolutely agree. The weekend before last, I was in Grand Rapids, Michigan, keynoting in the annual conference of the church that I was ordained in back in the 1970s. I keep I keep connected to that. I call myself a Christian, but you know, a lot of Christian denominations would not have me. You know, they would say that I was a heretic. And I think that just like the Democratic Party, I call myself a Democrat. There are a lot of things that the Democratic Party does and says, particularly the corporate wing of it, that I am horrified by, just like there's a lot of things that people who call themselves Christians do that I am horrified by. But I think that it's important for people, for progressives in the Democratic Party, for people who are actually students of the teachings of Christianity, or name your religion, because they're not that different. You know, Judaism, Hinduism, Islam, Buddhism, you can go right down through the list, that people of goodwill and people who are not using religion to front an agenda that serves the big corporations and the rich people, I think it's really important that we go back to using the words that, you know, to reclaim these words. Am I making sense?
Yes.
Okay, good. Joe, good to talk to a fellow Christian. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Joe in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind?
Happy anniversary. 43 years is something else, let me tell you.
Thank you.
I'm one of those ROTC guys you talked about, except I was in the Air Force. I got out after 4. I got out with a bachelor's degree and a master's degree, and have been relatively anti-war since. My patriotism was savage during the 2003 Iraq War for being against that war, even though I was a veteran. Didn't matter. My point is, or my question is, this morning I came into work, and I noticed the traffic was incredibly light. And then it dawned on me. I live in an area that is heavily government, with heavy government employment.
Right.
And all these people were getting Veterans Day off. And here I am, a veteran, working in the private sector ever since I left the military, and I acknowledge that's my choice, going into work. And a lot of these people who've never spent one day in the military are enjoying a quote unquote holiday.
Right.
And I'm not getting a holiday. We don't even get acknowledgement, you know, from anybody that, you know, thanks or whatever, other than, you know, Applebee's and all those other places.
Right.
And I'm kind of wondering why people who have made a choice to work in the private sector get, or the veterans who do, get penalized for a holiday when folks who work in the government who've never come close to serving at a military base get a day off. I mean, I know it sounds like whining, and I apologize for that, but I don't get it.
No, it's an interesting and good point, and it raises the question of how, you know, in a lot of countries, there are, particularly the Western European countries, there are holidays that are actually, I remember living in Germany, and there were holidays, some, many of them were religious, there were a few that had to do with the country itself, and I couldn't tell you the nuance of them, but there were a few kind of patriotic holidays where basically the whole country just shut down, and we just don't take our holidays seriously, with the possible exception of Christmas and Thanksgiving. We just don't. And if we're going to have a national holiday, if we're going to have a federal holiday, and which today is, then and I guess I'm guilty of this too. I mean, I'm here working, and my whole crew is here working, and it's a holiday. But you know, maybe we should all take the day off. I don't know. Although I don't think any of us are veterans, right? None of us are veterans. Okay, so we get a pass. But Joe, I understand your point. I don't think it's whining at all. Thank you for participating as a member of our military service. Thank you for your service. And I hope you have not been harmed by the insane policies that our country has driven so many of our military people into.
Oh, not at all, Tom. I'm one of the lucky ones. Not at all. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. And you know, these are – how do we honor our veterans? I think the number one way we honor our veterans is not killing any more of them. Right? I mean, you know, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney killed thousands of our veterans, of our soldiers. And then they refused to let us see the pictures of them coming home. They absolutely disrespected them. You had to bring them into the, you know, in the dark of night into a secret Air Force base in Dover or wherever it was. And, you know, it was illegal for cameras to take the pictures. Remember, Obama changed that in 2009. Said we could take pictures of the returning troops. But this is how little Bush and Cheney cared.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And Bush, who had been AWOL for a year, which, by the way, is called desertion, and Cheney, who got 5 deferments and never served. Really? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Larry, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Larry, you are a veteran?
Yes, I am, Dr. Hartman. Also, I'm the fellow who called and took the Bernie Sanders first time voting at 68 years old in my life. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud to say I did vote.
Cool.
I'm not so thrilled with my preparation. There was a lot to come. But the reason I called was, as a veteran, I came back from Vietnam in 1968. And my dad said to me, "You nothing but a bunch of whiners."
Really?
He called me a whiner for 20 years until on his deathbed. He said, "Son, you're a veteran. and I'm sorry this is difficult, but back in the day, they offered us programs. You can get such a tax break by going to an employer, and the government is going to help you veterans get jobs. Guess what? You go to the employer, and the employer says, shoot, I don't pay any taxes. Why do I need a tax credit?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same garbage they're giving these kids today, and it's a sad state of affairs. We need a real shakeover in the VA. I have been in 7 different VA hospitals and dealt with them since 1968. This is the worst experience I've ever had in my life.
I'm sorry.
I feel like I'm begging for health care.
I'm sorry.
It's a crying shame.
Yeah.
And I had surgery 2 weeks ago, so I've been wanting to talk to my 5 grandbabies and tell them, don't you be conned. You make sure that they're not lying to you when you go to war, because George Bush and what those guys did to us, I mean, to these kids today, I'm 68. I ain't got long to go. But you have made me so smart I can quote Socrates. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
I can quote Socrates where it talks about, you know, libel is your only, now that you've lost, the only thing you can do is slander me to death. And I use it all the time on Facebook, and I thank you so much for making me a smarter man.
Well, thank you, Larry. Thank you for your kind words. Thanks for showing up on behalf of the United States. And I wish you the very best, my friend. Thank you very much. Brian in Matthews, North Carolina. Hey, Brian, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Professor. Happy anniversary to you and the missus.
Thank you.
Yes, that's a little tough to follow the last gentleman there. Good Lord.
Yeah.
I wanted to touch on, well, first of all, I want to get to the second last guy, Joe, the veteran who's working. Tell me it is not whining. It is absolutely not whining. It's what the freedom we used to enjoy. Now we're so beaten up, we can't even express certain things because we're just horrified by the whole
thing. There is nothing wrong with saying, I put my life on the line, damn it. There should be some pay for that.
Exactly. Now, I want to call in because never has the phrase separation of church and state been more poignant than today. God's gun, country, America, so on. We're sold this bill of goods and thinking it's all about patriotism when we get there. When we get over off our shores, we realize this is nothing but war.
Yep.
This is just war. We just want to survive and get the hell back home.
Yep.
So, you know, the story you said before, these are not stories that I've known people from all over the country, same way how they enlisted. We don't have to have a draft anymore. It's a beautiful business model. So we break them down, give them bleak outlooks in their areas. They don't have any other choice. Guess who's lurking down there at the corner under that ominous streetlight? Oh, good old Uncle Sam. Come on in. I'll give you a college, give you some college credits. We won't tell you, you may get shot up and never come home.
Right.
Come on in, you got some time.
Yeah, we're not going to show you the pictures of the paralyzed vets.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm with you, Brian. Brian, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before you. Talk Media for the sane among us. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. And Paul in Woodinville, Washington. How you doing, my friend?
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
A caller said a few minutes ago, it just spurred something that she was saying about why government should help other people. And it made me think of how far the Republican Party has come from even what they used to be. You know, in 1919, this is just for Veterans Day information, 1919, the first Disabled Veterans Act was passed. And 2 years later, 1921, Congress reasoned why if we can help disabled veterans with rehab, rehabilitation, employment, such thing, why then every American is entitled to that kind of, every disabled American is entitled to that kind of help. And the first Disabled Americans Act was passed in 1921. This was under the Warren G. Harding administration.
A Republican.
An entirely Republican Congress as well, yes.
Right.
And, of course, there's been lots of development in the legislation through the 1940s, disabled legislation for disabilities of both veterans and regular civilians, included mental and cognitive and developmental disabilities. And then, of course, in the 1970s, there was the 1973 Rehab Act. So the idea that, government has historically, for almost 100 years now, had a role in helping people who need help.
Yeah.
And this party, this Republican Party, this idea that they're going to, like you said, throw it on the churches. When Ron Paul, was it Ron Paul or Rand? I think it was Ron Paul who said, let the churches. I heard every pastor in the whole country go, ah! Yeah, right.
Yes.
With what?
You
know, you look at the offering there, they can barely keep the doors of the churches open, let alone, one congregation. A congregation might be able to help one person in the church that was needed, with hospital payments.
Yeah, especially if somebody gets hit with a heavy medical bill. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Or a disabled child that's going to require help throughout their lives. I mean, that could take down a whole church. You're right, Paul.
Sure.
Very, very well said. Thanks for the history lesson, too. You always bring the most fascinating things to this show. It is wonderful to hear from you. James in Nuwala, Oklahoma. Hey, James, you are a Vietnam vet?
Yes. I joined the Army in 1959. I was the rebel without a clue and went into the Army for a career opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And spent seven and a half years before I realized I didn't have enough time to pull the tour in Vietnam. I came back from Europe in 65, and 8 months later, I got orders for Vietnam. I extended my tour 90 days because I didn't know politically what the war was all about. And then I came back so radical that it's changed my whole paradigm. My whole life has been changed by it. And since we've had three criminal aggressive wars, that's where we're at. And we're looking at the obstructionist Republicans who are preaching war and the lack of veterans care. I have been my own doctor for the last since 1967 because the VA was overwhelmed then, and it's really overwhelmed now with all of the Iraqi and Afghanistan veterans.
Right.
And I have just had to make my own existence. And you and Link TV have been my counselors. And I just appreciate so much the truth. The truth is what the people are due, and they're not getting it. Corporate TV, corporate period, is the indication of the ruin of a democracy if it hasn't already ruined it.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that I'm glad that I only pulled the 90 days because I would have either been a Canadian or a fugitive. If I'd have stayed in, you know, and I was pleased with the Army up until I went to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I still think there's a reason for being in the service, but not for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, no, and Vietnam radicalized a lot of us. I mean, I was a conservative Republican following in my dad's footsteps when I was 13, and that was in 1964. And by 1965, 66, as Vietnam was starting to crank up, and certainly by 67, I was absolutely, totally screaming on the other side. Of course, I was going to Michigan State by then, and I was totally on the other side. And my dad and I were having these knockdown dragouts, about the Vietnam War. And it changed my life, too, even though I didn't go there. I think it changed America. James, thank you. Thank you for sharing your experience with us. It's fascinating. I appreciate it. Dan in Simpsonville, South Carolina. Hey, Dan, it says here you disagree with the anti-war, anti-vet caller.
Yeah, I mean, I have a father and I have a brother that both served
right in
active duty. And for someone to call in and say not that they disrespect them, but they hated them, was his term, and that, you know, he thinks that people ought to negotiate instead of war. Well, we've got people over in Syria and Iraq getting their heads chopped off, men, women, children. How are you going to negotiate with these people? Why, he sits wherever he sits safe because the military protects him. And it just frustrates me to no end to hear these people that don't want to have war. You don't have war with people you can negotiate with. You have people that could never negotiate.
Well, in theory, I mean, we certainly could have negotiated with Grenada. We could have negotiated with Honduras. We could have negotiated with Nicaragua. We could have negotiated with El Salvador. Or we could have just left them all alone, frankly. But with ISIS, yeah, I don't disagree. You're not going to negotiate with ISIS. It ain't going to happen.
No, so you have to be.
You couldn't negotiate with Hitler. I mean, you know, Neville Chamberlain tried that. It didn't work out so well. So there are.
Well, exactly right. And for someone to call in and completely disrespect those people who are volunteering, and I really appreciate you standing up for the military with that guy.
Yeah, I think it's important to separate the soldiers from the policies, because soldiers don't make policies. They're just looking out for their butts and their buddies. And they deserve our respect, our admiration, and our appreciation. And they deserve to be treated well and taken care of, particularly for service-connected disabilities. Dan, thank you for the call. Thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio. And thank you all for being with us all day today, for these 3 hours anyway. And we will be back for more tomorrow. It should be a great day. And don't forget, in the meantime, democracy is not a spectator sport. You gotta show up. Participate. PDAmerica.org, MoveToAmend.org, all kinds of great organizations out there. Tag, you're in. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.